Today's program is brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit culinarycenter.com.
This is Mike Edison, host of Art Senses of Seizures. You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, please visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll load. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte. I just want to say a quick thank you to everyone in San Francisco. Over the weekend, I got to go to ABV on Monday and do a guest spot. I want to thank everyone for coming out for that. That was really a lot of fun, and especially thanks to Ryan Fitzgerald and the crew. Everyone I got to see at the Fancy Food Show out there this week, too. That was really cool. First time to go to that, so thanks for having me out there. Very cool. I can't say the weather was a nice break from New York. It was raining and cold the entire time, but still good to get away. But back here in Brooklyn, New York, I'm really happy to have back on the show, actually almost 3 years to the date, I had this guest on, and she just started up her own rum distillery, and since then she's really been blowing up, and you can find her rum, which is called Oni's Original New York City Rum, in a lot of places, and there's reasons for that, because she's an awesome person making awesome rum. So welcome back to the show after 3 years, Bridget Fertle of the Noble Experiment.
Awesome. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's nice to have you back. You've been extremely busy. I remember when I had you on the show last time, 3 years ago, it was really awesome because you were like, I just really wanted to get out of working on like Wall Street and stuff and start making booze. And you're like, I didn't realize that it was going to be like this. Like I was going to meet like all these people, and it was going to be this whole like thing, you know. And it was I thought that was really sweet.
Yeah, it's been an adventure to say the least.
Yeah. I mean, it's really been cool to watch your company grow and watch you grow too. Because like I remember then also you were asking me like after the show, you're like, so what do you? What should I do? You're like, how do I get
I still
there?
Want to know what I should do.
Yeah, it was really sweet. And good time hanging out with you then and ever since then when we get to see each other. So tell me, I mean, the distillery has grown so much.
Yeah, so then. I think, you know, that was probably 4, maybe 5 months into sales. So we're about 3 years and 3 months into sales now. I was a one-man band at the time.
Yeah.
Now I've got a small team, which is awesome and exciting. And I am no longer selling the rum out of the trunk of my car, which is cool. Yeah, we've grown nicely here in our home market of New York. And last year, we just started distributing in new states. So we're in about 10 states now, and we're available in the UK and a little small distribution in Norway as well.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
So when you started having, I mean, did you have to like do you upgrade from a car to like a van, like a personal van to deliver it? And then when you got to the point where you couldn't fill that up anymore, you went to full distribution?
At some point, I was like, this is really a silly idea to keep doing this. I was making the rum and selling it and sitting in traffic in New York and then trying to collect checks from the various people I had sold the rum to. And at the time, I said, you know, it's got to be an easier way. So I had decided at the time to sort of start a relationship with a smaller distributor, so not one of the big guys right away. And it was nice for at that time, and sell, you know, one large sum of rum to a distributor, and then they make sure it gets where it's going, and they make
one check instead of running around trying to get everyone's checks.
Yeah, I
couldn't handle that.
There is a price to pay for that, obviously, but you know, it's worth it, I think, or at least, you know, there's some benefit to it.
The cost of convenience for you and your sanity too.
Exactly.
So you started expanding on the distillery, and I remember you saying like the goal was to have like a tasting room and like have a bar in there, and you've gotten to that point now too. Like outside of just the marketing and sales, and I mean, there's always going to be more of that to be done, of course, you know.
Yes.
But now, like, now you've got this great like facility where you can have people come in for tours and tastings, and
it
looks really cool. I haven't actually been in since you've had that put together.
It's been a whole, you know, another arm or appendage of the business, which has been interesting. We opened what we refer to internally anyway as the Dak Shack in August of last year, and that was basically due to a law that changed here in New York that allowed us to have the ability to actually open. So yeah, we've been hosting people, private events and tours on the weekends. We've got some really fun bartenders working behind the bar there, and the whole, you know, premise of it is the daiquiri, hence the name Dak Shack. So
it's awesome.
Yeah,
I mean, well, we're going to talk about that in a second for sure, because the daiquiri is actually, after so many years, it's finally starting to see it's like true come up. It's,
you know, yeah, like,
but I mean, like the idea of having a tasting room bar in a distillery now is such a huge thing. And like you said, it's just a recent thing that passed where you can actually do it. And even, you know, like places like Three's Brewing, you know, they've got a huge selection of spirits. And of course, like the Shanty was like the first one to really get to do it. So do you think that like, how do you think that is like shifting the idea of like the distiller and the craft distillery? Do you think it's like, do you think that it's something that is like, I guess what I'm trying to say is, do you think it I mean, I know it's a draw, but do you think it's something that when you're already at a small scale adds a lot of headache and like more stress of something you've got to take care of as well?
Probably shouldn't admit this, but yes, it's a lot more, you know,
now you're running
as I said, yeah, exactly. You know, I started out with a manufacturing business and a sales and marketing business, and now I just added a retail bar operation to it. So there's been a lot of learning with that, needless to say. But I think that really where our niche is like, no, we're not a typical bar.
Right.
We are somewhere along the spectrum of bar, event space, distillery. And, you know, since kind of day one of my biggest kind of goals for the brand, or what I'm a proponent for, is education. So if we can get more people in there learning about our brand through the, you know, educational tour, and then they enjoy a couple of cocktails after, that's great because it helps pay the rent.
Is it, so the way I understand it, and correct me if I'm wrong, the reason why you're able to do this, or the way that you can do it, is it has to be connected to the same building, correct? Or like, because of the three-tier system, or did something change in the three-tier system?
It's like, there's no easy answer to that question.
It does seem very...
Yeah. Like, so initially when I got my distillery license in 2012, you could not do this at all with my license. Subsequently, the governor has changed, you know, written bills that amend a lot of the old laws. And at the end of last year, he passed something that was called the Craft Act, and that gave certain licenses even more abilities and other licenses the opportunity to get more abilities. So for our license, it gave us the opportunity to apply for a bar license. So we started doing that at the beginning of this year, and because it is a new law and because it is the government, it took about 8 months for them to finally say, okay, You can do it. Whereas, you know, other local distilleries that are, have farm distillers licenses, which means basically they source their ingredients for their spirits from that are grown in New York State. So a lot of the whiskeys that are made here, you know, are made from New York State grains. They automatically, they didn't need to apply for that license. But because we make rum and sugarcane isn't grown in New York and right. we get it from Florida and Louisiana, we have a different type of license.
So. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But is there like, for instance, like, well, do you feature other spirits besides stuff that you produce?
We don't on a day-to-day basis, but we can, and we do okay. for private events. You know, if you wanted to have your wedding there or something like that, we would place a special order for whatever yeah. spirits you
want. I was just wondering because yeah. of like the different distilleries that have tasting rooms. Some of them have other spirits.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times they support other yep. local yep. distilleries, yep. which is awesome.
Yep.
And I think that's just like, that's the way it should be.
Yeah.
That's totally cool.
We do a locals night once a month where we have oh, cool. the menu of other local products. So
nice.
Yeah.
Do you use like other local products that are like non-distilled products, you know, like different like food, like for instance, like maybe a turkey from Heritage Foods or something.
Yeah, I would love yeah, I would love that. And a lot of what we would like to do, you know, plans going forward is to do, you know, have more collaborations with local producers of every makers, local makers for lack of a better term, and you know, have people in the space. Recently we collaborated with for a tour with City of Saints Coffee Roasters, which is two blocks away from the distillery, and Fine and Raw Chocolate, which is, you know, right around the corner here, on a tour and a tasting. And then we paired our rum with coffee and chocolate cocktails.
So. I mean, that's just natural.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly.
They're all buddies.
Exactly. Exactly.
We should do a Grand Army Oyster Rum Night.
Oh, yeah.
At your bar.
Hell yeah, I'd
that
love
would be
that.
Awesome.
I would love that. That would be awesome.
I think that's cool. You know, that speaking of like what you were saying too, like there's a lot of, I have been noticing a lot of like tours, like, I mean, like we, there's always been like, you know, like when you go to like the Lower East Side, there's, or not Lower East Side, but like East Village, there's like a heavy concentration of cocktail bars, so it's just natural yes. that you would bounce around and make like a little mini cocktail tour out of them. But there's also been a lot of people who are like designing these tours that involve like breweries, distilleries, restaurants, any kind of like craft thing, like
yeah.
you kind of like pop around to that, and that's really cool. I think that's like what you're saying with the coffee roaster and the chocolate maker.
I think there's a huge opportunity if anyone out there is listening and wants a business idea. There's a huge opportunity to have a booze tour, whether it be breweries or distilleries. We're all like in manufacturing zones, and so not necessarily, I mean, we're two blocks away from a subway stop, but I think there would be an opportunity similar to like wine tours in,
sure.
you know, out east in Long Island, buses that go through all of the distilleries. Every weekend.
Party bus.
Yeah. All the tourists that are in Manhattan, too, coming out to Brooklyn and getting even the tourists now in Brooklyn. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, Bridget, let's take a quick break.
Yeah.
And when we get back, let's talk about the focus of the Dag Shack. And let's talk about the daiquiri because
yeah.
it's like since the last time you're on the show, even just 3 years ago, it's been a crazy increase in popularity of this, like, once kind of botched classic. So let's talk about that when we get back with Bridget Birdwood.
Cool.
This one's called Better Forget by Zuli. That's Z-U-L-I. We will be right back on The Speakeasy.
Hey, International Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
And we are back. You're listening to The Speakeasy, and I've got Bridget Fertile of The Noble Experiment and Oni's Rum in the studio today after a three-year break from the first time. And we were just catching up on the progress of the distillery and the tasting room, the Dak Shack. And, the daiquiri, for the longest time, it was a misunderstood drink, mm-hmm. You know? It was red, and it was blended, and it might not have even had lime juice in it, you know? It was not the right... It wasn't a real daiquiri. And then, bartenders started bringing back the popularity of the daiquiri. We were just like, wait a minute. It's rum and lime and a little sugar, and it's the most perfect cocktail. Yeah. It really is the perfect cocktail.
I agree.
A Manhattan, to me, is like a perfect cocktail, but... I think the daiquiri kind of trumps it because you can have a daiquiri year-round. Like, we're going to my bar after the show to make daiquiris with Oni's Rum. We're going to go to Grand Army, so if anyone wants to come by at 5 o'clock, we're going to start doing that. But, like... A Manhattan I will definitely have in the wintertime. Maybe not so much in the summertime.
Yep.
But I'll definitely have a daiquiri in the wintertime just as much as I will in the summertime.
Me too.
Yeah. It's perfect. So it must have been very fortuitous for you as someone who produces a white rum to have this very iconic, classic cocktail come back into the spotlight and just in the most hardcore way.
Yeah. And it has. And after I had, distilled and made Oni's and was obviously very excited and proud of it and, the flavor profile and everything. But we messed around for a while and still do, on the best Oni's cocktail, right? Like, how should people drink Oni's? And just nothing can compare to the way that, it tastes in a daiquiri, and a lot of our, we kept, and we still do, and believe me, I drink other things, but at all of our events, especially consumer-facing things, right? So we, in the industry, see this real interest in the daiquiri again, but most of the population does not know
that's true.
What a real daiquiri is.
Yeah.
And it's so exciting to introduce a real daiquiri to people because it's pretty simple to execute if you have limes and sugar at home. So we make them a lot at events and people are like, what is this? And changing that perception of the daiquiri person by person is super exciting. Obviously, doesn't hurt at all that bartenders love daiquiris. And
anytime that someone would bring white rum to us to taste and basically bring it to try and sell us on it, that was the first thing that, you taste it on its own first because that's what you want to do.
Yeah.
But the real test is how it stands up in a daiquiri.
Yeah.
And that's, especially since you were doing all the sales in the beginning, did you, you must have encountered that everywhere, right?
Yeah.
It must have been shocking to you. You're like, what's the deal with the daiquiri?
I remember specifically one, if not the first time I brought it, and I came from Wall Street. I didn't have a net. You remember probably from last time, do you have any friends you can introduce me to? Because I don't know anyone from the industry. So I remember I was friendly with Michael Neff at, he was at Ward 3 at the time because I lived on Reed Street when I worked on Wall Street. And I remember going in there and showing him Oni's for the first time. And they made a daiquiri with it right there. And then it started to happen over and over and over again. So I quickly realized that was going to be part of the trend. But, we still work every day to get that to be a call for us. So, Bacardi at one time spent so much money getting people to just drink rum and Coke. And, you know, especially white rum. So trying to reinvent the bar call, especially for cocktail bars, you know, why shouldn't a daiquiri be, you know, as, you know, ordered as frequently as a Manhattan or an old fashioned? You know, we believe it should. So
yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it's gotten to the point where, especially in you know, like the modern classic cocktail bars, you know, it's become it has become that. But you know, like I said, you know, like you said too, it's like, you know, we kind of live in this little bubble here in New York, so it's like it doesn't expand, but it should. It absolutely should. And there, I think there was like a Bacardi, like a really beautifully shot commercial, where they were talking about the daiquiri, but I don't think it was as effective as they expected it to be.
I think in recent years, was it the 60s or the 70s or whenever that was, historically, they developed the bar call as the rum and coke. And I think that now, with the interest from the cocktail community in daiquiris, that, you know, everyone's trying to see where it fits. But every day I have people coming, or not every day, but every weekend, we have people coming into the distillery and introducing them to a daiquiri. And we have to kind of tell them what it is before we sell it to them, because a lot of people are afraid of the word, because they have these misperceptions around it.
Exactly. Something that's like, something that looks like a hurricane.
Exactly.
Jack, did you have any hurricanes? You were just in New Orleans.
I did not have a hurricane.
Come on, dude.
I know.
All right.
I'm sorry.
Get on computer and buy some flights. We're going
back. Going back?
Yeah. I know you just got back at midnight, but...
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Let's go.
Let's do it.
But yeah, that's like the perception is like something that's kind of like a frozen, like hurricane glass, something that's a strawberry daiquiri.
I got to jump in one more time quickly, because what I did have was something called Jean's Daiquiris. And as you know, like what they call a daiquiri in New Orleans is a 7-Eleven Slurpee with a free pour of the shittiest booze that they have.
Dude,
about that's halfway up the cup.
Yeah, like a 44-ounce styrofoam, and then you walk around the quarter getting wasted.
Yeah, I did have one of those, just to say I did. I didn't finish it, though.
Well, good for you, man. Yeah. but yeah, that's exactly the stigma, you know? It's this weird frozen thing that's like super sugary and fruity. I mean, I would almost not tell someone the name of it. I would call. I joke around. Sometimes I'll go to I do this with like my buddies who work at like cocktail bars. I'll go in and I'll order a rum gimlet, which is a daiquiri. Yeah. And that started becoming like an inside joke with us. But it was like, you know what? Actually, you kind of have to tell people that are new to it, mm-hmm. that have that old perception of what the word is, you know, this is a rum gimlet. Like, oh, okay, cool. I like gin gimlets, vodka gimlets. I'll try this.
Yeah.
And you're like, that's a daiquiri.
Yeah.
That's actually what that is.
Yeah. Well, you get the immediate, and especially because Oni's is very, pretty dry. There's no sugar added back to it, but you get the now becoming famous term that you as a bartender and the rest of the bartenders that might be listening know a lot better than I do, but something not too sweet.
Yeah.
And that's the first thing. Oh, I don't like anything sweet. Well, our daiquiri is really not sweet. It's pretty boozy. There's a little bit of sugar and some lime juice in it, right?
Yeah.
It's not, arguably an old fashioned is a lot sweeter than than our daiquiri.
Totally. What's your, do you have a favorite daiquiri spec?
Our house spec at the Dak Shack is 2 ounces of Oni's, 3/4 of an ounce of lime juice, and 1/2 ounce of cane syrup, 2-to-1 cane syrup.
Cool. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Like, I think that like in the summer, I like a little bit juicier, but then like in the winter, like now I would want like 3/4 of an ounce.
Yep.
And, my buddy Thomas Wall, he and Brian Miller, who works at the Dak Shack, they turned me on to the idea of like pouring in like fresh lime juice, but dropping it by 1/4 and then squeezing a lime wedge in for the extra 1/4, but keep like throwing the lime wedge in the shaker.
Yeah, he does that at the
bar. So you get the pulp and the pith and the skin and the oil and everything. So it's like it creates this crazy like huge round mouthfeel. And so I started doing that with everything, like anything that has citrus in it. I, you know, like whiskey sour, it gets a wedge in it. Gimlets, you know, margaritas, they get a wedge. Throw it in the shaker, and it's like, it changes the drink. for like so much for the, it elevates it to another level. And I don't know, it's really cool to like to see the way that it's not just like this rum, lime, and sugar combination. Everyone kind of has their own way of doing it, and it's such an open, you know, it's like really the palette is just like, it's like a blank canvas, you know, and like you can kind of mess with it, and it's like one of these like very like simple platforms, and it kind of lends itself to experimentation.
Totally.
Did you ever think about having like an Oni's rum daiquiri competition?
No, but we should.
You hold it at the Dag Shack?
We spent a lot of time deciding on that spec that we have at the Dag Shack. Mm-hmm. And it, just to your point, it's so important. Like, and it changes it so much. For example, at some of the consumer events we'll pour daiquiris at that are consumer facing, people aren't, you know, as used to tasting spirits, we'll pare back the ratio of rum because they will think it's very strong.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting dynamic. But we should have this daiquiri competition at the Dag Shack. I like that idea a lot.
We'll get Heritage Radio involved with it.
Yeah.
And Jack and I will come in and be the commentators.
Yes. That would be so awesome. I would love that.
Live commentator. That'd be so... Dude, that's a goal, man.
Yeah.
We'll call it like a tennis match, you know?
Yeah, totally, man. Oh man, and use like actually limes. We'll actually have a tennis match, but like use limes instead of tennis balls.
Whoa. Awesome.
That's dangerous. With a light glass around, that'd be a great idea. Yeah. No, that's okay. You know, we'll talk about that after the show.
Yeah, we will.
Yeah, I think it's really cool. It's such a cool time for rum. Like you really nailed it on timing with, especially with like tiki drinks coming back into vogue and like in very specific ingredients and like, specifically having Brian Miller like on your team, like he's very, very like anal about his tiki drinks. He's like the dude, you know. And he's very specific about rums and people who are into rums, and people have been getting back into rum over the past like 5+ years, you know, really in a big way. It's just a really cool time. It's a really great time for rum. And I think especially, you know, we went through this saying about spirits go in like for the cocktail renaissance and people actually getting more into spirits after like there was a big wine boom, then like craft beer. Now people are really into spirits, and it started with I think American Scotch and then American whiskey.
Yep.
And then mezcal in there. And now it's rum's turn, you know. But it doesn't mean that any one of those that come before it has gone out of vogue. It's just everything is getting elevated at their times, and it's all just elevated to this beautiful level to where like there's so much education, exposure to it, and just really great products, you know.
It's been really cool just as someone who sells this every day pretty much, you know. It's been really interesting even over the 3+ years that I've been, you know, selling the product. The first almost 2 years everybody was like, why don't you make a whiskey? And now for the past like year and a half, it's been cool to be a part of that because I, you know, obviously believed that was going to be what was, you know, part of what was going to happen. Not that there, just to your point, not that there's like a lack of interest in whiskey all of a sudden, but people are no longer like,
they're
rum.
Not afraid of it. You know, they're not,
exactly.
There's like enough information out there to where you don't have to feel like, feel stupid about like trying something that you don't know about, you know.
Totally.
it's really easy to understand now that there's so much exposure and education and enthusiasm about it. So it's the most exciting and easy time to get into this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And people are excited to get you into it, like, you know, preaching the gospel of rough.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of we just talked so much about daiquiri, so I think it's time to go make some. Bridget and I are going to go to my bar now and make some daiquiris. So we're going to be there at 5 o'clock at Grand Army in downtown Brooklyn, Borum Hill. It's 336 State Street. And you should definitely go by the Oni's, the Noble Experiment Distillery. It's out here in Bushwick. It's very close to here. It's just a couple blocks away. It's a really beautiful space. Go by, have a daiquiri, have some rum, and say hi to Bridget. Yeah. And yeah, check it out, onis.com. All right, let's take off.
All right.
You coming with us, Jack? All right, cool. All right, we'll see you next week on The Speakeasy. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.